I seem to be doing a lot of proxy speaking today. I sat with a team at ITWeb about, I don't know, January, February this year, about putting the agenda together for this conference. And I suggested that they approached Professor Malcolm MacDonald from Cranfield to come and give a talk on strategy and marketing principles, because he's really, in my opinion, just about the top authority in that field in the world. And Malcolm, and I suggested an outline of what I thought would be good for him to talk on. And Malcolm was very keen, but he just couldn't get his diary to sync with the program here, so eventually he dropped out. And then, sort of in a conversation with Jackie, I volunteered to give, I was just going to do the ASCO case study together with Robert. So I volunteered to do this talk as well. So you've probably got by now that, broadly speaking, I hold to a view that strategy is the most important thing. So we're going to talk about what is strategy, and we'll talk about some things about markets and strategic driving force, and why market-focused strategy is the fundamental arbiter of strategic change, and how to drive business improvements from an understanding of strategic marketing fundamentals, and we'll look briefly at a little case study. So, what is strategy? I have good reason to believe that if I said to all of you here today, you've got 5 minutes and 20 words maximum to define strategy. How many people we've got in the room? About 40 or so. I would probably have about 35 different definitions. And the ones that agreed, I would probably consider to be off the mark. I wrote a paper in 1990 on the importance of aligning IT with business strategy. And I was a lot younger than I am now, well, you can figure that one out, and probably a bit more arrogant. And I kind of thought, well, I understand strategy, and maybe some of my audience won't, so I'd better define strategy. Well, much to my embarrassment, after 3 pages of military metaphor, I discovered that I couldn't define strategy. So I started on a journey to discover what is strategy. And just by the way, I suspect that if I were to ask you all in 5 minutes and not more than 20 words to describe or to define BPM, we would have a similar experience. But I'm not going to go there. I'm going to talk about strategy, because I really promised this gent over here that I would. So I came across Malcolm MacDonald's work in 1991. And Malcolm says very succinctly, strategy is doing the right things viewed from the perspective of the customer, and tactics is doing things right viewed from the perspective of the customer. And if you take nothing else away from this entire conference, that may be the single most important slide that you've seen. Logically, if you do the right things well, you will thrive, because you're giving the customers what they want, and you're doing it really well. So the million-stroke-billion-dollar question is, what are the right things, and how well am I doing the right things? And that's where my logo comes from, just as a matter of interest. By extension, if you do the right things but you don't do them too well, you'll survive. And if you do the wrong things, your organization will die. It's just a matter of how quickly. And the better you get at doing the wrong things well, the faster your organization will die, as evidenced by IBM in the late 80s, early 90s, as evidenced by the dot-com crash, as evidenced by Dimension Data at the turn of the millennium, and I could go on. So one of the lessons that you need to draw out of this is that the IT industry, and in fact, the whole business improvement industry, is really, really good at doing the wrong things well. Not all the time, but certainly some of the time. So when you are debating and deliberating what to do, you need to make sure that the guru you're listening to is in fact giving you advice which is going to lead you to do the right things and do them well. Because I have to say, based on the fact that I've spent 23 years talking about failure and how to prevent failure, and therefore investigating numerous failed and suboptimal projects and turning a significant number of them around, that failure is at epidemic levels, certainly in the ERP and the BPM space. Strategy has a time dimension to it, or strategic planning has a time dimension to it. So there's a piece about forecasting, which is I look into the past, I see where I'm coming from, and I extrapolate that to the future, and if I'm going to hit an iceberg, I change direction. If I've got more ambitious goals, I need to change direction. But it is so that you cannot click your fingers and change the direction of a business instantaneously. It's also not about goal setting. Yes, you must have strategic goals, which can look like we want to be the dominant player in this market sector, wherever, with this product range, or we want to make one strategic acquisition in the next 2 years, or whatever it may be. But as I said a minute ago, you cannot click your fingers and change direction. Real strategic change follows an exponential trajectory, that red line. And that red line is basically the same whether I'm changing the direction of a ship or a motor car or an airplane or an organization. And so I need to apply change drivers to slowly change the direction of the ship. And part of that is psychological, as we touched on yesterday afternoon. Because really what I'm doing with strategic change is I'm changing the mindset of the people, and I'm changing the way people work and the way they think about their business, the way they think about their customers. I got this series of diagrams from Malcolm McDonald, and this particular graphic has been copied and pasted from Harvard Graphics 3 to PowerPoint 2000 and something to what we see here today. And then a few years ago, I read the book From Good to Great by Jim Collins. How many of you read that book? Folks, if you haven't read it, it's compulsory reading. Please go and order it on Amazon when you leave here. Really, really good. Steve mentioned it yesterday as well. And one of the case studies is the strategic growth of Gillette. And the interesting thing about it is it took many, many years from the time that Coleman Mockler took over as CEO in 1975 to the point where Gillette became the global brand that it is today, with razors with five blades and a little blade on the back to cut your sideburns and all of these good things. Very interesting. If I can get this to work. Why is this not working? It's better. If you look at that previous slide, I literally copied and pasted that red line onto this scanned image and I stretched it to fit. Isn't that remarkable? A red line that was drawn 23 years ago, based on a generic definition of an exponential curve, perfectly fits the Gillette case study. And I promise you folks, there's no kludging or fudging there. And what that proves to me is that high-value, sustainable strategic change takes time. It takes a consistent vision of where you're going. It takes a clear plan of how you're going to get there. And it is going to follow broadly the same trajectory of change as you follow every time you go around the corner. And it is so that if you throw the wheel over and you're not Jeremy Clarkson on Top Gear, you will roll the car or trash the business. And it is so that if you drive along the road flip-flopping and changing direction, you'll end up where you were going anyway, because there is nothing that is inducing change. So this little diagram gives you a metaphor to understand how you bring about sustainable, high-value business improvement. I could talk at length. I have a whole method which goes about measuring the gap and then planning the major projects and activities that will close the gap. But that's a whole lecture in its own right. I did a webinar on it a month or so ago. If anybody's interested, email me and I'll let you have it. So what I've just shared with you from a theoretical point of view is important in that it provides a context to what follows. It gives you some vital principles. Folks, even more important than what I shared with you in the first presentation is what I've just shared with you. I mentioned that I was an engineer by training, and I set out in 1989 with the stated objective of, quote, bringing the disciplines of engineering to the IT industry, which has subsequently been elaborated to include ERP and business improvement. It took me about 10 years to figure out that engineers do not design bridges to stand up. Do you realize that? If you go to an engineer to design you a bridge, they will not design it to stand up. They'll design it not to fall down. And there is a fundamental difference in mindset between what I do to make sure this bridge doesn't fall down versus the rah-rah and the road shows and the hype and the public relations that I do to make the bridge stand up. And I think you will intuitively realize that saying to that bridge, go, stand, bridge, stand, is actually not going to work. So an engineering approach is about systematically understanding what causes failure, and then in a very reliable and dependable way, systematically making sure that failure does not occur. So I drill holes in the abutments and I look for planes of weakness and I either remove the rock or I reinforce it. I put the model of the bridge in a wind tunnel and I check the aerodynamics and make sure that when the wind blows off the sea here, the deck's not going to fly away. I do long-term durability testing on the concrete to make sure that it's not going to degrade and collapse in 100 years' time. Because it is so that if I have a well-conceived goal and I do not fail to reach my goal, guess what? I've succeeded. But success is a necessary consequence of preventing failure, not the other way around. One of the things that I realized some years after the penny had dropped with this is that when I spent 4 years as an undergraduate at university, I spent 4 years studying failure and how to prevent failure. We didn't have a single lesson on successful bridge design. In my entire PhD research, I investigated what was necessary to prevent the failure of large dams. And I really offer this to you for your consideration. It doesn't matter what you're doing in the world, what you're doing in life, what you're doing in your organization. Be clear on making sure that you have a viable and valuable goal, and then focus your energies on preventing failure, and you will succeed. In this journey, I've also come across some very unpleasant facts that a lot of people don't want to talk about. 70% of IT projects are trashed totally before they reach completion. Most of them should never have been started, by the way. Financial Mail reported a few years ago, 19 out of 20 ERP implementations do not deliver what was promised, and that's based on a confidential survey of executives, because publicly they're not going to admit that. And I'm not talking at an operational level, I'm talking at a strategic executive decision support level. The majority of ERP projects work at some level operationally. The majority of BPM projects work at some level operationally. But when you get the executive behind closed doors and off the record, you will generally find that it has not met their expectations. 70% of BPM, same thing. 90% of strategic plans fail to make any significant difference. And it all comes back to what I spoke about yesterday afternoon, and this thing called strategic capability. The ability to visualize a future state and get there. So in my mind, there's not ERP and web portal and BPM and this and this. There is strategic business enhancement. And all these other pieces are just parts of the jigsaw puzzle. If I just go and do an ERP project and I don't look at change, I don't look at the workflows, but I look at the workflows as an output, not an input, and I hold that workflow should be dictated, not workshopped most of the time. But you have to have executive engagement. All of these things are just different facets of this hugely rich picture of how do I craft a highly successful, highly competitive, highly profitable business. So what's not an engineering approach? I've slipped up here. You think I can? I'm not going to try one of these chairs. I should have got myself a chair. So imagine I'm standing on a chair. As a child, I used to go to bed, go to sleep, and I had the following dream a couple of times. Stand in a chair in the crowded room, and I'd flap my arms, and I'd float around the room talking to people. How many of you have had a dream like that? Okay. It's a really great experience, isn't it? Those of you who haven't had one of those dreams, I suggest you put an order in for one right now. It's really fun. The problem is, if I go and stand on one of those buildings and jump off flapping my arms after I've had this fabulous dream, shouting, I can fly, I have to tell you it will literally be a bloody mess. So, what is not an engineering approach is pulling rabbits out of the hat, using mumbo-jumbo to convince people that that's actually not a rabbit, but it's a naked dancing girl, or whatever else it is that so many do. So in my journey, I came across McDonald's work. I came across Michael Porter, obviously enough. I mean, if you're going to talk strategy, you have to at least listen to what Michael Porter's got to say. And Michel Robert on strategic driving force. The three really informed opinions that have shaped my thinking on strategy. And I concluded, some many years after I asked the question, that this word strategy actually is about the essence of why the organization exists and how it thrives. And I could elaborate on that for an hour if I had the time. It virtually never changes. It's generally intuited, and it's to be discovered, not invented. What's the impact of this thing called strategy? Now, I'm going to go directly to the ERP space, but I suggest for your consideration that this diagram applies to pretty much everything. And I only came across this, I only figured this out a couple of years ago. The reason most execs are frustrated with their ERP is because they're actually down here somewhere. This is the industry norm for ERP, because generally ERP implementations pay little or no attention to strategy. Most of the time they don't know how to draw strategy in. They don't look at the things that I was showing you in the ASCO presentation about precision configuration. If you go and take an ERP implementation and you do wall-to-wall precision configuration like the examples I showed you, and you then add some little pieces of strategically aligned custom software, you will drive the value up a factor of probably 100. And one of the things to realize, folks, is it doesn't matter whether you're talking ERP or any other form of business improvement, including BPM. There are some consultants who will deliver you a result down here, and there are some consultants who will deliver you a result up there. And if you use fee rate or rand or dollar value as your arbiter of who you appoint, you're missing the point. And one of the things that I suggest for your consideration that gets missed most of the time when people talk about case studies, is that it is actually all about people. And I suspect that if you go and investigate the truly successful BPM projects, the truly successful ERP projects, you will find that a couple of the key people in that mix, both on the business side and the consultant side, intuitively understood what I'm talking about right now, and they did it. And if you go and look at the ones that are a mess, the ones that were trashed three quarters of the way to completion, the ones that went live, but in 5 years' time you can't see that they've made any difference, you will find that they're down there and they have no understanding of the principles we're talking about. So be very, very careful about how much reliance you place on method, technique, and tools. Because, folks, it's really, speaking as an engineer, it's really about people. Get the right people with the right knowledge and experience, and mix them together with a little bit of method, and you will achieve exceptional results. Take the wrong people with the wrong knowledge and experience, or with a lack of knowledge and experience, and it doesn't matter how fancy your method is, it doesn't matter how glib your salesman is, it's not going to work. As I mentioned earlier, one of the things that I do, because I've been talking about failure for 23 years, I've been asked by a lot of clients to come in and look at failed and suboptimal projects. So when I talk to you about failure rate, I'm not talking based on something that I heard in the corridor or I read in the newspaper. I'm talking about something that I live with and see on a regular basis. About 10 years ago, I sat down and did an analysis of all the information that I'd collated around this topic of IT and ERP failure and what was required to achieve success. And remember that I was looking at it in the context of strategic business improvement, so you'll recognize the image on the cover of the book. And I wrote this book. If anybody wants a copy, email me, and you can have an electronic copy with my compliments. It's a bit outdated, but many of the principles remain valid. And when I did this analysis, I found the following. I did it initially in the context of primarily ERP, a little bit less IT, and what I found subsequently that this applies to any business improvement project, any strategic planning project, with minor adjustments, and to any BPM project. 30% of projects fail outright because of mythology. Because the snake oil salesman told us that if I stood on the top of the building and flapped my arms, I would be able to fly to Cape Town. I regularly see projects which are undertaken for reasons which, when you cut them down to a pragmatic, sensible view, are ludicrous in the extreme. But people use this big language and confabulate, if you like, my word, people into thinking, well, I've got to have one of these, I'll have a confabulator, and then when they figure out that confabulate sort of equals confound and confuse and whatever they... 19% of what causes failure is a lack of executive custody. Folks, if you don't get the piece right that I was talking about a few minutes ago, you're setting yourself up for failure. Executive custody is not a nice to have. Executive custody is an absolute necessity. Lack of strategic architecture, lack of strategic alignment, 16%. If you don't know where you're going, if you don't know what the right things are, if you don't know how the business thrives, if you don't know how the business got to where it is, you will do the wrong things and you'll get in the way. And the best thing that will happen is that they'll kill your project before it goes live, and the worst thing that will happen is you'll go live and destroy the business. One of the things that people do not understand today, and it applies whether you're talking ERP, BPM, whatever, if you really mess it up big time, you can put the business out of business. So again, be very, very careful about who you get into a partnership with to mess with the guts of your business. Lack of information, poor documentation, data, if you like, if you're talking ERP, soft issues and the change impacts, the stuff we spoke about yesterday, the lack of an engineering approach, the lack of precision, the lack of rigor. Oh, and by the way, something of the order of 3% of projects fail because of technology or methodology. So frankly, folks, if you don't get that right, it really doesn't matter whether I've got a good method or a bad method. Honestly, it doesn't. Because if you don't get that right, if you tackle the project for the wrong reason, if you don't have executive custody, you're destined to fail. So you must start top down. Oh, but pyramids and triangular organizations are passé, they're old, they're out of date. Well, maybe in some ways they are. But did you know that the average human being can only manage 7 plus or minus 2 direct reports? If I've got more than about 9 or 10 people reporting to me, I won't actually have a clue what's going on. I'm sorry, folks, but that is just fundamental psychology. The optimum reporting line is 1 to 7. If you're very operational, maybe 1 to 5. That is a necessary consequence of having people working together in a coherent fashion. If I start at the bottom, and I do understand that a lot of the people who talk about process aren't really talking about process. Because process in the narrow definition is workflow. But if you start off with the people at the middle or the bottom of the organization documenting flowcharts and you build up, do not be surprised when A, you don't have executive custody, B, the thing doesn't work very well, and C, it's a total mess. Start at the top, define the strategic objectives, define where you're going, and drive that down in a consistent, coherent manner until you get to do the stuff at the bottom of the organization. The factors for success, slightly reciprocal. How much time have I got, Paul?
10 minutes,
okay. So the factors causing failure, we've just seen 19% of projects fail because of the lack of executive custody. I cannot tell you the number of times where I've gone in. I had an instance a couple of weeks ago, I was sharing with Paul. I'm running one of my briefings, why your ERP is not delivering and how to fix it in 2 weeks' time. I get this email from an executive of a South African company. He says, we've got this ERP project. We've been going for 18 months. It's a mess. I want 15 people to attend your briefing. Will you come and do it in Cape Town? So I phoned him up and I said, would you care to tell me what the issues are? Because I'm not sure that giving you a generic presentation if you're 18 months into a project that's a mess is the right thing to do. So I gave them an alternate proposal to come in and do a pulse measurement. And then having heard what a crisis there was, I then get feedback which says, no, we don't have time to do this for 6 weeks. And then I get an email from the IT manager who says, who are you? I've spoken to all the technology experts and we're doing all the right things. We don't need you at all. There was no executive custody. I figured that out from 20 minutes of telephone calls. The business had abdicated to the chief information officer. Folks, I have to tell you that if you have an ERP project or a transversal business improvement project and you give it to the chief information officer or the chief financial officer or the chief operating officer, which is slightly better than the previous two, or the HR executive, or as I encountered with one organization, the legal affairs executive, they had a fabulous contract, but the rest of the project was a total mess. There is only one person who can be the custodian of a transversal project, which per definition includes ERP, and per definition includes any major BPM initiative. And that is the chief executive, because as we said yesterday, the chief executive is the custodian of the integrated, holistic view of the business. Change facilitation. I might give that a bit less today than I did when I put that slide together a couple of years ago, if you take account of what I said yesterday. But you must have the communication, etc. So it's not necessarily a big thing. Strategic architecture. You must know where the business is going, how it's got there, etc. And the other aspects. Fundamentally, the challenge for business is the right information to the right people at the right time in the right place in order to make the right decision. Folks, there is nothing more important than the right decision. I can do everything, but if I don't make the right decision, I can kill the business. One good decision can cause the business to double in a year, 2 years, 3 years. One bad decision can trash the business. A whole progression of bad decisions and a whole progression of good decisions, you can work that out for yourselves. How do you determine the essence? I don't want to leave you high and dry, because one way to determine the essence of the business is to get everybody in the room together with a facilitator. The problem with getting people in a room together is that some people talk more than others. Have you ever noticed that? And interestingly enough, the people who talk more are the sort of more people-oriented people, so they tend to be the less deep thinkers. No offense, mean we need sales people and we need HR people, and I'm neither of those people. So what I recommend, if you want to find out the essence of the business, is do what I've outlined there. Go and do 1 hour one-on-one interviews with each of the executive team. Go away, synthesize it. Because what you will find is that in many cases, when you ask the question, there's this kind of stunned look because nobody's ever asked the question, what's the essence of the business and how did it thrive? I used to ask them what was the strategy, and that kind of got even more all over the place. And then take lots of notes. There's a whole art here in terms of how you harvest that information. Did you know that if you take notes in a one-on-one interview, most executives will tell you things that they don't want anybody else to know? I've always taken lots of notes. I sit there in a one-on-one interview with a pad, writing so fast that I scribe about 80% of what's said. And frequently, executives will tell me things that they certainly don't want to go outside that room. But there is a psychology that most of us want to be heard, and most of the time we're not heard. So you get in front of somebody who's taking notes, who's listening, who's active listening, feeding back to you, engaging with you, is really interested to hear what you have to say, you will discover all sorts of things. You're going to go away and synthesize it. And what I found is that quite frequently, what comes out here in step six, nobody told me in step three. Because it's intuitive. We do it on a gut basis. Once you've figured it out, print it in 100 millimeter high letters, stick it on the wall behind your desk, and tell everybody in the business, that's the essence of our business. Do the right things. The right things are the things which help us to do that better and more. And the wrong things are anything that gets in the way of that. The organization where the entire staff, from the chief executive to the junior cleaner, know the essence of the business and how it thrives will be massively more successful and massively more competitive with far less detailed process work than an organization that doesn't know that and gets in the way. Interesting. I'm a Merck fan. Don't even ask me to look at another brand, barring the fact that my last Merck had some technology innovation and the light bulbs kept blowing. Daimler Chrysler. Depends who you talk to, but from where I sit and from what I've read, a total disaster. We had Mercks starting to look like Chryslers, and we had Chryslers starting to look like Mercks, and it was actually, if you're a Merck fan, I've been driving Mercks for, I don't know, 28 years, kind of really unsettling and unhappy making. So a few years ago, Daimler AG realized they'd made a mistake and they sold Chrysler. The essence of Daimler AG's business, Mercedes, is engineering excellence. The essence of Chrysler's business, in essence, is technology innovation. They're not compatible, folks. If you're going to do a merger, either make sure that the organization you're acquiring is compatible at a core driver level, or be big enough and heavy-handed enough to force them to change their driver. What are markets? Markets, as we heard yesterday, it's a group of customers with a particular preference who respond in approximately the same way to a given offer. Market attractiveness factors. How we go about selecting a market. Customer critical success factors. How customers select our product. 5 minutes. Gut feel. When you buy a house or a car or whatever, you can have your list of head factors, but I guarantee you when you go and buy the thing, you go and buy something that doesn't score well. So there are ways you can facilitate to get people to unpack the gut factors. You've got to do these things at a gut level, not a head level. You can look at your entire strategic environment in terms of your core strategic parameters, your core strategic objectives, your owner critical success factors, etc., etc., etc. And you need to look at all of those in order to come up with a holistic business improvement model. If we look at strategic driving force, Michel Robert has his set of, I think it's 9 strategic drivers. These are some other ones, your core economic driver, how you use money, etc. Exemplified by Pick n Pay, Woolworths, and Edgar's. Which of those is a retailer? Woolworths is a retailer. Edgar's is a bank. They sell stuff to get you to borrow money. And 20 years ago, Pick n Pay was an investment house. It sold fast-moving perishable consumer goods in order to get you to buy stuff for cash, and it bought preferably on 90-day terms, and it invested the money for 90 days, and that's how they made their profits. From where I sit, Pick n Pay's lost that plot, and that's why they're in difficulty today. You find more and more long-life products on their shelves. You find perishable. They're trying to compete with Woolworths. And actually, Woolworths is not the competitor. Woolworths have redefined the rules of the game, and they're giving Pick n Pay a hangover run for their money, and Pick n Pay is actually, historically, operating in a different space. But they've lost sight of that. Market-focused strategy. Hopefully, folks, I don't really have to talk to that. By now, I hope you will understand that understanding your customers, your markets, why people buy from you, and giving that, the right things done well from the customer's perspective, has to be the most important thing that you can do to make your business more successful. And if you mess with those things, the business will at best survive, at worst it will die. And if you misdiagnose and throw a whole lot of whatever, including a whole lot of BPM, at doing the wrong things well, you will eventually kill the business. And we saw a slide yesterday with some large names gone into bankruptcy. Be interesting to go and investigate. So your project must be strategic aligned. Your lead consultant in particular must understand the essence of the business and be able to act as a translator and guide. The essence must be documented, must be publicized, published. Executives are the custodians of the executive view. Quick case study, stalled ERP project. Went round, asked, did the interviews. Bottom line was, we have a service promise which says that if our, this was in the clearing, freight forwarding and clearing industry, if we cause your shipment to arrive late, we will make good your losses. They were working with a software company whose goal was to be the biggest in that industry sector in the world, which meant that they were dealing with the 90% of the customers who didn't have that level of commitment to service. And so they weren't committed to service. So there was this complete misfit. I went back to the sponsoring executive on the second day. I said, this is what I found. This is your core strategic driver. This is the software company's core strategic driver. They're totally incompatible. He looked at me and he said, the lights have just gone on. On the strength of those 2 days, he killed the project. We went out to the market. We interviewed a number of other software vendors in the same space, and I think it was the third one we got to during the presentation. The chief executive of that software company said to us, we are totally committed to service excellence. If a problem with our software causes you to deliver late, we will financially compensate you for your loss. Can you hear? That's a marriage made in heaven. Because you know the strategic essence, you ask the right questions, you make the right decision. You don't have to go and go through a huge, humongous other stuff to get there. Just ask the right questions. Be clear what the essence is. Make sure that your service provider understands your essence, is aligned with your essence, is committed to your essence. Essence is stuff that you have in little bottles that you put a drop in to flavor a cake. That's what we're talking about, folks. We're not talking about huge, humongous projects here. We're talking about lifting out that essence, putting that drop in the project, and making sure the project is aligned. I hope you've got something out of that. As before, Please write down what's top of mind for you right now.